This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatto. Up first this hour, progress in understanding more about cloning. Although scientists have been able to create Dolly and other famous animal clones, the success rate is very low. In fact, only 1 to 3% of animals cloned from adult cells survive. And the reason is a mystery. But now a group of researchers from the Whitehead Institute in Cambridge say they've made a discovery that may help explain it all. On the line is Dr. David Page, a professor of biology at MIT. He is also an associate investigator of the Howard Hughes Medical Institute and a member of the Whitehead Institute, and he joins us from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Page.
Thank you, Ira.
Hey, tell us a little bit more about the problem when you trying to clone animals from adult cells.
Well, let's think about what happens in normal development. If we think about our bodies as adults, they consist of many specialized types of cells, so blood cells, muscle cells, liver cells, brain cells, so on. But the amazing thing is that these many types of cells all derived from just one cell. That was formed when the egg was fertilized by a sperm. So during the course of human development, a cell's descendants face ever-narrowing possibilities. Just as each of us grew up and matured, we made some decisions and we narrowed our choices. The same is true for the many cell types that become specialized and eventually make up our complex bodies. The question now, in the case of cloning or in some other applications of cloning, is whether an adult cell, a specialized cell, can remember or be taken back to its youthful ways when everything was possible. So can the clock for an adult cell be reset to that of a much more youthful cell? That's the challenge.
And we're not talking about an adult stem cell here, right?
Well, of course, there's much discussion about adult stem cells, but the first question is, can a perfectly typical cell of an adult be made to think like it's a newborn?
Mm-hmm. And so one option then is to try cloning from embryonic stem cells. Can you tell us the difference between the two types of cells? Are the results different?
Sure. So it turns out that if you try to clone an animal, let's say a mouse, from a very youthful cell, say an embryonic cell, it turns out that the cloning tends to be much more successful. It succeeds much higher fraction of the time than when you try to get an adult cell, let's say from a breast cell, as in the case of Dolly, to try to get that adult cell to think like it's very young. That happens at a much, much lower efficiency than when cloning experiments are attempted with embryonic cells.
Mm-hmm. So with embryonic cells, you have, what, 1 out of 3 successes as opposed to many, the 1 to 3% survival with the adult cells?
Yeah. When you try it with the adult cells, in most organisms where it's been attempted, sheep, mice, and so on, experimentalists are lucky if they observe 1% of the cells growing up into live-born animals, whereas the rate of success is much higher using embryonic cells. Mm-hmm. But the applications here are not simply in the world of cloning. We're trying to understand how human development unfolds, and then there are also applications in areas like the regeneration or development of replacement tissues and cells and so on.
1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK is our number. We're talking with Dr. David Page. And so you think now that the recent research out of Whitehead may explain the difference in the success rates between the two. Tell us about that.
Well, so what we did was to try to find genes that who's being turned on, find genes whose expression tells us that the cell is thinking in very youthful ways. So it turns out all the cells of our body contain, as the Human Genome Project has told us, all the cells of our body contain about 30,000 genes. And those genes are present in every one of our cells, no matter how specialized they might be. But in any given cell type, just a subset of those 30,000 genes are flipped on. And we went looking for a set of genes whose expression, whose being flipped on, was indicative of those cells having a very youthful mindset and having a full world of possibilities before them. So basically, we found a set of genes that that serve as markers of a cell's youthfulness. And what we found is that these genes are expressed in the cells of very early embryos within the first days after fertilization in a mouse. Presumably, the counterparts of these genes would be expressed during the first weeks after fertilization in humans. And the trick when asking an adult cell to think youthfully, we suppose, is can these genes of youthfulness be turned back on? Can the clock be set back to zero? So it's not necessarily that we found better ways of encouraging cells to return to a youthful state, but now we have a way of asking, have they returned to that youthful state? So we can get an indication of the level of gene activity as to the youthful character of a cell.
Well, in the successful rates from the adult cells, do you find, or is that what you'll be looking for, to see if these genes have been switched on?
Well, experimentalists are trying lots of tricks at present to see if adult cells can have their clocks reset. And that's exactly where we think these genes will be most useful as markers, in seeing whether the whole catalog of methods that are being tried now to get cells to think young will be able to monitor whether the cells are in fact resetting their clocks.
And do you think that you might be able to switch on some of those cells or to reset those clocks in adult cells?
Well, that's what's being tried. I mean, there have been a couple of recent reports just appearing in the scientific literature in the last week, which throw some cold water on the notion of adult stem cells. There had been hopes that in some quarters that it would be a straightforward business to convince, let's say, a blood cell to think itself into being a liver cell or a muscle cell, and without having its clock set all the way back. The very recent reports suggest that what had been proposed as successes in turning one type of adult cell into another, those apparent successes may not have actually occurred. It may be that that adult cells of one type can turn into another adult cell type only with tremendous difficulty. Perhaps what has to happen is that those adult cells, if they are truly to be turned into another type of specialized cell, they might have to first go back to their youthful beginnings. In other words, get them back to a point where they're expressing the genes that we've found to be markers of youthfulness. So a great debate is going on now about whether one adult cell type can turn into another without going back to zero. And I'd say the recent studies suggest that may not be happening. It may be absolutely essential to get a cell to return to its youthful past before taking on a new specialized future.
Can you turn it back so it's in its youthful past?
Well, that's where it actually looks like the method of cloning might be workable, but unfortunately at present at very, very, very low efficiency.
As the Dolly cases and things like that?
Right. I mean, Dolly, of course, Dolly was one very exceptional animal who came out of many hundreds of efforts. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of low efficiency that we're talking about.
1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a phone call or two in here. All right, let's go to Tim in Pennsylvania. Hi, Tim.
How you doing?
Hi there. Go ahead.
Two quick questions. I'll take my answer off the air. I was just wondering if an implied end result of this research might be immortality. And can you comment on any clandestine research going on in this field? Thank you.
It wouldn't be clandestine anymore if you commented on it.
Clandestine research is very difficult to know about. Of course, there have been, you know, much of the press attention has been to research that perhaps not entirely out of the limelight is nonetheless taking place outside the usual scrutiny of our scientific colleagues. I think that troubles a great many of us in the field to think that relatively unwatched and unregulated efforts might be proceeding. But I think we all, at the same time, take some comfort in knowing that these are very difficult, technically demanding methods that are, in all honesty, succeeding only in the very best of hands, and the best of hands are fortunately generally attached to the minds of very open scientists who are participating in a very public enterprise.
Mm-hmm. What about the part of his question about immortality? I think whenever we talk about cloning, some people jump to the conclusion we're talking about immortality. I guess people here.
Well, I don't think we're talking about immortality in a physical sense at all here. There is the sense that we can get cells to live on in dishes for long periods of time. It doesn't. Death of Dolly, I think, helps illustrate the fact that clones are no more and perhaps even less long-lived than normal animals.
Did Dolly die prematurely? Because the clone, she was born at an older age?
The details of this debate will not be settled for some time, but there will be ongoing, tremendously detailed studies of Dolly's fate and the fate of other cloned animals, and we'll have to see if, in fact, their lifespans prove to be reduced. But I suppose there are inklings that will be the case.
Because I think she died of a respiratory illness, right?
Right, that's right.
And is that something that's, I think, even normal in sheep?
Well, but we have to realize also that the great majority of cloned animals have had any number of abnormalities even from the time of birth. And so I don't think that anybody can say there's strong evidence at this time that even cloned domestic animals will have a normal lifespan.
Right, Dr. Page, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Ira.
We're going to take Dr. David Page is a professor of biology at MIT and associate investigator at the Howard Hughes Medical Institute. He's also a member of the Whitehead Institute. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to come back and talk about equipment for the Urban Warrior with a researcher at the Picatinny Arsenal in New Jersey, where they make all these things that blow up. So stay with us. We'll be right back.